Joining us now by phone from the Northfield Hospital is their president and CEO, Steve Underdahl. Steve, thank you so much for taking some time and being with us today.
Happy to.
Let's talk about the hospital. I guess, you know, the big question is, we'll get the big one out of the way first. Is Northfield Hospital and Clinics prepared to handle maybe a surge in the next week or two of outbreaks within with the COVID pandemic?
So I think so, and I say that with only a little bit of trepidation because there are so many moving parts. I think we feel like we've done all of the things that we can rationally do to prepare ourselves to be ready for what happens, whether there's a surge that hits a local community like this or whether we play a role in a surge that hits the broader metropolitan area where we're a supporting player. So the complexity, I always, you know, the analogy that I use is that it's less of an arithmetic problem and it's more like one of those terrible SAT questions with two trains leaving Chicago, one at an angle and one at not, and one going 20 miles, you know. There are so many moving parts that it's difficult to know for sure, but I think we're in pretty good shape. The fact that we had some lead time and that the hot spots that have happened on the coasts have not really, they've taken some time to move towards the center of the country, really gave us some much needed time to really do two things. We had to kind of stand down our normal medical center operations and in the same period of time, stand up all of these new systems and processes that really transformed us into an emergency response system rather than just a hospital and clinic. So before I forget to say anything more about that, that I do want to make sure that I thank the Northfield Hospital and Clinics team. The transforming of a regular medical center into an emergency response center in a couple of weeks is just amazing. I mean, it reminds me of those, those documentaries that you see from World War II where, you know, we have to build a road where no road was here before and we have to build a bridge where there wasn't one and we got 4 days to do it. They've just done this astounding job. At the same time, they're worried about their own families, their own kids, their own parents and grandparents. So they're just amazing.
Let's talk about one of the questions that I've been asked a couple of times. I've talked to people about talking to you today, and it's the PPE, the personal protection equipment. We've heard so many stories from around the country about it going to the highest bidder, the state with the most bids. From that standpoint, are we ready to go? What has that area of this COVID pandemic preparedness what has that area brought to you?
So again, I would use a little bit of the same caveat that I did with my first answer is that I think we're in pretty good shape relative to what we know at the moment. So our supply chain has really worked hard to make sure that we have not only a good supply of PPE, but also the other supplies that we might need. One of the sort of additional variables, and this is a good and logical thing, so please don't hear it as a complaint, but the state has started doing coordination of materials and resources in a common database. So the idea there might be if you have more than you need, somebody else that's got less than they need may need to acquire it. As you might guess, that does, sort of poke our anxiety button a little bit that, our confidence level that we felt pretty good about our own modeling for some of these things, then if we're going to be sharing them more broadly, does that change how we're thinking about it? So as you might guess, we are assessing and reassessing personal protective equipment for our staff and under what circumstances and in what clinical indications that we use them. But then increasingly, what is the level of concern from the public and from others about what, if anything, they should be doing.
You know, we've had calls from listeners also that have stated, and I know some people doing this, that they'd like to help out by making masks, the surgical mask that would be suitable for hospital personnel to wear. Is that happening? Is that even possible? Can they make a homemade mask sewn together that would be up to the specifications that you would need?
It is. So there's kind of a couple of different efforts underway about mask making. And one is we're working with a limited number of stitchers that we've provided surgical wrap, which is, you know, that if you've ever had surgery, that sort of blue clothy stuff that you see that has, you know, kind of the correct properties. And then they have very specific specifications that they can make these masks. And they are making them. They're led. This effort is being led by one of our staff members here with colleagues. They have a variety of sort of screens in terms of you're able to produce it according to the direction. You don't have any cats at home, that kind of thing. And there's a second group of folks that are really making home-sewn masks that are primarily cotton masks. And we're working with our colleagues at Northfield Shares to really be the point of coordination and collection there. Those masks are probably would be a kind of a last resort for medical use, but may have other uses in terms of if we had lots of people infected or possibly infected that were sending home and having a supply of masking as opposed to using medical PPE. It might be helpful for them to use those as well. This is sort of evolving day by day. So even you know, the White House briefing yesterday, Dr. Fauci is sort of rethinking his guidance about masking. So it's if it seems a little confusing, it's because it's a little confusing. The one thing I would share with your listeners that I think is really important, though, is that when you see somebody with a mask who doesn't have other protective equipment on, they don't have goggles or a shield or a gown or gloves, that's what we call source control masking. So what that really means is that mask that's on you is to protect others from you. It isn't to protect you from viruses. And so that's sometimes hard for people to understand. So they see somebody with a mask and they think, well, maybe I should have a mask too, because that will afford me some protection from the environment. The reason to wear a simple mask is only as a source control effort, in that I'm protecting you from me. And so that's why you would use a mask. And I would anticipate, Jeff, that there will be continued evolution of how we're thinking about masks as it relates to, you know, is it or is it not a tool, an additional tool in addition to social distancing and hand washing and all that or not. The downside is, and I'm out of my depths with the science of this, but the downside is that used inappropriately, you may actually have people that are touching their face more and spreading a virus more by having a mask that they don't know how to wear and clean than if they had not had one at all. So I think this is a debate that's going to continue. But back to your original question, we do have a group that's working on the surgical wrap versions that we can actually use in a medical center. And then there's community folks working on the more cotton ones, and we're coordinating that, or it's being coordinated with our colleagues and partners at Northfield Shares.
We're talking once again with Steve Underdahl from Northfield Hospital and Clinics. Let's go back a little bit to something we were talking about before, when you had mentioned going through the steps to transform the hospital from one entity to the other. If somebody, I know you're not accepting visitors right now, but this is hypothetical. If someone were to walk into the hospital or the clinics, would it look different than it does now? Are there different procedures than we have known in the past, for the past, you know, 20 years or so going there?
No, not necessarily. I mean, there's not if depending on which door you came in, you would potentially see some ante rooms made of some plastic sheeting and 2x4s that have been established. So we have donning and doffing spaces. If you come in one corridor, you might see that. Otherwise, it would look about the same. Our major changes is that if you have to come, we ask people to call ahead of time if they can. They have an emergency to call 911. But we're limiting the number of doors that people can come in. And then we have screeners at the door that will be really making sure that we're understanding whether somebody is ill or potentially ill on their way in, and understanding why they're there and who they might be, what their purpose is. So that's probably the main difference. You know, we're trying not to turn a place of healing into a jail. By the same token, we're trying to put in the appropriate security precautions so that we can institute good controls.
What about the governor's order to shelter in place? That has, boy, you go down, you drive around, you don't see any traffic. You know, I'm still coming to work, Terry and I, in downtown Northfield, where our studio's here, but everything else is kind of shut down. It's kind of spooky. Do you feel that order to shelter in place is helping slow or stop the spread of that virus?
I do. I think the I should say too. I think the Waltz administration and the governor's office have been really impressed with their efforts. I think they have found a sweet spot between responding to a level of urgency without doing things either for political reasons or for panicky reasons. So I think they've done a good job. In terms of the physical distancing and sheltering in place, I think we did it at the right moment. I know it's hard for people, but when we look at how this transmission happens, and there's the data is still really evolving in terms of our understanding of how much of the spread happens asymptomatically. So in other words, how much of this is passed between people who feel well. Diseases like Ebola, by the time you had somebody sick with Ebola, everybody knew that they were sick and they were, so with a disease like COVID-19, the inability to even understand whether you're sick constitutes just an incredible danger. Asking people to shelter in place and asking people to take it seriously, I think will, in the end, if done well, save thousands of lives across the country, because it will keep us from having all of the effort needed at exactly the same time. And I know it's hard for people to stay away from each other. You know, my wife and I were talking about this last night. I mean, we've got elders and grandchildren I've taken to making little videos for my 2-year-old granddaughter Stevie. I'll spare you the details, but this week's installment was looking for baby goats.
Okay, all right. Let's, Steve. I want to ask you about from a financial standpoint. With the shutdown of many businesses, there's so many small businesses and really large businesses as well that are going through some financial pains right now. The hospital. Have you with the changes in the way that you are administering some of the services, has that been a financial hit, or do you anticipate a financial hit from the Northfield Hospital? And are there, maybe some type of recovery methods that the government was coming out with that might help you recoup that?
Yeah, that's a great question. The straight answer is that to stand down your regular business and then stand up what is essentially a public health utility is, just financially devastating. We're always a little bit nervous about sounding, at least I am, I don't want to sound like in this moment, I'm taking time to complain. So that's always the tension here. But just as an illustration, our most recent estimate is that we're probably burning through about $1 million a week. And so we've got good reserves and all of that, but not indefinite reserves. And this is playing out in medical centers large and small. And so I heard a statistic recently that across the state, it might be as much as, you know, $30 million a day. So that's probably, that's unsustainable long term. We hope that in our conversations with both state and federal government, there is some consideration that as medical centers have transformed themselves into emergency response centers, that there is some reflection of what that effort has cost, so an unintended consequence is that we don't decimate particularly rural healthcare any more than it already has been. Now, having said that, I recognize that your listeners, you're a small business yourself. Everybody's in a sort of a similar boat. So I don't want to do, crocodile tears just for the medical center. My wife and I were talking about this the other day, that one of the things that we're talked about doing today actually is some of our favorite small restaurants that are closed. Can we figure out ways to buy gift cards from those restaurants? And that's actually one of the things my wife is working on today. So I think there's lots of people in this boat together, but the medical infrastructure cost across the state will just be like an Apollo project kind of scale.
Mm-hmm. Once again, Steve Underdahl from Northfield Hospital and Clinics is with us. Kind of continuing on that further, the services that you do offer that are not related to the COVID-19, somebody does get sick with, the flu or breaks an arm or something. Are those services, should they just call in advance and get instructions on what to do from there?
Yeah. We really want people to understand that we are continued to be available to the community for the things that the community needs. If you have a medical emergency, if you have an urgent medical issue, if you're going to have a baby, if you have an urgent surgery, all of those things we will continue to help you with. If it works to call us and it's not an emergency, please call us. That helps us coordinate things. As an example, with our birth center, it's a nervous enough time having a baby under regular circumstances, but under these circumstances, it creates even more anxiety for moms and families. So we've been really trying to help our OB patients really understand the great lengths that we've gone to protect the mom and baby and family at the moment that they're neediest to have a baby. So we do want people to not think of us as closed, but to just give some additional consideration to how they interface with us. So if it's not urgent, if you can call us, that's helpful. Even if you're in a non-emergency, but you think you need to come into the emergency room, call us ahead of time, and that lets us prepare.
Mm-hmm. Once again, Steve Underdahl, our guest from Northfield Hospital and Clinics. And are visitors allowed anywhere in the hospital now? And if a child were to need some services, would their parents be able to accompany them? What is the situation for people not having a type of illness or any medical emergency?
So that's a great question, Jeff. And so the most general answer is that we're not having visitors. But there are circumstances certainly where there are exceptions. So little kids that need a parent certainly would have a parent. In our OB department, spouse or partner is allowed, provided that they're over 18 and they're symptom-free. We potentially have some end-of-life situations where there may be some extenuating circumstances. So our whole goal is to be reasonable and rational about this, but in general, not have visitors.
We've got a couple of calls from listeners, and they ask some pretty good questions. One asks, is there an opportunity to corroborate with Northfield EMS to help train interested individuals who people who are interested in assisting doctors, volunteers, people who want to help out? Is there any type of program or corroboration that you could have to help them out and if needed have them help serve the community?
So we don't have it's a really good question. We don't have a training program in place, although that's an interesting idea. What we have been doing is that we have been fielding calls and emails and offers primarily from medical people, retired or recently retired physicians and nurses and others that have said, I'm willing to help. What we've done with that is we've collected all that information and sorted it in a way that we can access these folks should we need to kind of draft them into service. So it's actually been a really heartwarming thing, Jeff, that physicians in the community that have been retired for a little bit and are at a stage of their life where they're older themselves and, you know, one could understand them wanting to just stay out of harm's way, send me a note and say, you know, if you need my help, I'm available.
Boy, that is heartwarming, yes. We have another question from a listener. This was the state's Director of Emergency Management, Joe Kelly, had mentioned yesterday that they're identifying some alternate sites around the state, up to 5 to 7, I believe, that would be acceptable for non-critical patients. And that would add about 600 beds. As far as the state and regional planning goes, if there is a large wave of COVID-19 patients, are we going to have a spot? We see, New York, we see Italy and Spain struggling with places to put people. Are we going to have that?
Yeah, so there, your listener is exactly right. There is a fairly extensive plan at a state level to say what is the overflow capacity, and that takes many different forms. It could be having a hospital space that's set up specifically for COVID patients. It could be a hospital space set up specifically for non-respiratory illness patients to try to achieve some separation. And it could be setting up convalescence spaces. So somebody doesn't need to be in ICU anymore, maybe doesn't even need all of the resources of a hospital, but really aren't ready to go back to their assisted living or to home out on the farm or whatever it is. Here in Northfield, what we've done sort of this in two phases. Phase one is that we have really put in place a process to use our existing building, literally every square foot of it that we can imagine, to keep people that need to be under hospital control. And the reason for that is that's where our resources are, that's where we can staff, that's where we can control. A plan C is to have some community resources, primarily for folks that would be on that convalescing side that are not quite ready to go home yet and could be looked after with less intensive medical care. And we're working with some community partners around that. I don't think that's nailed down completely, so I don't really want to out the organization yet, but that's in place.
Steve Underdahl is with us, President and CEO of Northfield Hospital and Clinics. Steve, we have one more question from a listener that we're going to ask, and then we'll ask you for, I know you got to get going, so if there's anything else to add, but their question is, what are the numbers of ventilators and respirators that are available to you at this point?
So we, like most hospitals our size, are not a ventilator unit. So we have a small number of ventilators and ventilator-like equipment primarily anesthesia equipment that we can use to manage vent patients for a period of time until we can get them transferred to an ICU that has a vent. So when you hear the discussions about ICU beds across the state and across the nation, essentially what that means in this current environment is a bed with a ventilator. So we've got a small supply of our ability to that gives us the ability to manage people short term and to keep them ventilated as we would do transportation to one of the larger facilities that has a vent unit. So and we report our capability along with everybody else in the Minnesota to kind of a central clearinghouse now that's been stood up. So that, and again, it's I think the governor and his team have done a nice job with this to try to make sure that the state has some clear vision about who has what resources in what capacity. That's much better understood across the state than the last time I visited with you.
Mm-hmm. Once again, is there anything else you'd like to add to this? Anything that we haven't covered yet, Steve?
You know, at the risk of being a little trite, the things that you're hearing over and over again, I think, are still true. This is a new virus. We don't know everything there is to know about it yet. So stay home. If you're sick, stay away from people. Wash your hands. Don't touch your face. All of that stuff that I know is sort of wearing on people now is still really good advice. The other thing I just, in closing, that I'd like to just say my thank yous to colleagues at the City of Northfield and local law enforcement leadership and the leadership from the school district. You know, as an example, our colleagues at the school district have a 3D printer, and they are creating for us some PPE face shields using their 3D printer. Again, we're just really blessed in this community with just an amazing amount of talent, but also just really good people.
Wow, I had no idea things like that. They had equipment like that. That is pretty amazing, and it's wonderful that they're able to put this to a good practical use as well.
When I took technical classes in high school, I made a jewelry box.
Yeah. You can't make those protective masks out of wood, can you? Mahogany. All right. Steve Underdahl, thank you so much for joining us. We certainly appreciate it. We'll let you get on with your day, and we'll check in with you again, I guess, as needed. Thank you.
All right. Thanks, Jeff.
Mm-hmm. Steve Underdahl, Chairman and CEO, CEO and President of Northfield Hospital and Clinics. As always, this interview will be available online, kymnradio.net, so you can download it, listen to it online, or just download it, take it on your device, and anywhere you want to go. All of our interviews are available that way, once again, on kymnradio.net.